Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. On the other line, it's David Ramil. David, did Goran Dragic get snubbed for Eastern Conference Player of the Month?
No, he did not.
So the winner of the award was LeBron James. There was a grassroots movement of sorts for Goran Dragic. I mean, he's had maybe one of the best months of his whole career. 22.5 points per game, 5 assists per game. His shooting percentages were off the charts. 53.8% from the field, 45.7% from three-point range, 82.7% from the free throw line, which is a high number for Dragic, who's typically not a great free throw shooter. But he lost to LeBron. And LeBron's stats, look, I was all ready to get on this show and just say, Dragic was robbed. LeBron only won because of name recognition. This is a popularity contest. This is garbage. But then you look at LeBron's stats and you're like, oh wait, no, he totally like deserved it. 26 points per game, 10.6 assists per game, 7.2 rebounds per game. His shooting percentages, 63% basically. 56.8% from three-point range. I mean, LeBron was just on another level in February.
Yeah, I mean, you look at those numbers, and look, I mean, if anybody should have a better perspective of it is Heat fans. You tend to ignore the fact that he's having these great games because he's just always had great games. And then, you know, they just go underappreciated. If anybody can be playing at such a high level and be underappreciated, it's him. I mean, we've just taken for granted how much he does, what he can do. I think it's a very good case as to why he's arguably the best player to ever play in NBA mm-hmm. history. And, you know, we just tend to ignore that. And, as far as Dragic is concerned, I don't think he feels snubbed. You know, I appreciate what Spoelstra was trying to do, and you can certainly make a strong case that, you know, he was the best player on the team that's played, you know, among the best over the past month or so. I don't have the numbers right away, but what would you say was Miami's record during that month-long stretch in February?
In February, Spoelstra won. Yeah, I think they're 13-2.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. 13-2. So, I mean, that's the best record over that stretch. He's the best player on the team, but I guess you're looking at individual statistics and production, so you have to give the nod to LeBron. But, yeah, I mean, it's good for Dragic to get that recognition.
8-3.
Right, because the streak actually started midway through January.
Right. So they were 8-3 in February, though. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, continue. Yeah.
No. The Cavs were 9-1, so I mean they were up there. So I mean maybe that probably played a small part in that.
Yeah, and I think you know for Dragic, who really didn't get much All Star pull at all, and we argued here in this space that he should maybe not make the team because there's so many great guards in the East right now, but he should definitely get more recognition than what he's getting. He's starting to get more recognition now. He got votes. He did for February Player of the Month. And even though he didn't win, he's starting to get that recognition. That's good. And look, you know, the Heat have been preaching the whole time. It's not about I or individuals. It's about the team. They're all trying to help each other out. And that's all great. And that's all roses. It'd just be nice if the Heat could get, like, one award this year. I mean, look, Eric Spoelstra got Coach of the Month for February. That was great. And that's probably more – that reflects more of what the Heat have been doing than more so than anything else, any other award they could have gotten. So that's
sure.
Good. So
I mean, look at the fellow nominees there. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, yeah. He's been getting and deservedly so a lot of attention and appreciation. DeMar DeRozan, who's basically taken over the Raptors with the loss of Kyle Lowry due to injury. John Wall. I mean, the Wizards have been playing pretty well as of late. Scott Brooks hasn't really turned around, and they've been sensational, particularly at home. So, I mean, that's That's pretty, and LeBron, of course. So when you consider the five best players over the Eastern in the Eastern Conference over the month of February, and that Goran is one of them, I mean, I think it speaks pretty highly. And you're right that he is certainly getting a lot of attention. It's probably not going to make much as far as it's not going to make any difference when it comes to end of season awards.
Yeah.
But it's still good to recognize and to see him being recognized across the league by media and others. And,
yeah, he's well fallen deserved. Off a lot based in I think the eye of the NBA fan since his all NBA season in Phoenix, and it's nice to see him kind of get back up to that peak where he was. But we're going to take a look at the schedule for the Heat coming up and really just break it down as far as their back-to-backs, home and road games, all this stuff, and see, okay, what do they have to do exactly? What's the path that they need to make the playoffs? We're going to look at that. But before we do that, Miami Herald's Barry Jackson had a report that the Heat haven't shown any interest in any of the buyout candidates. Terrence Jones has been mentioned, right, among Heat fans. There's maturity concerns. Omri Caspi, who has that unfortunate thumb injury. And Marcus Thornton, who has been in the eye of Pat Riley for the last few years. Those are position duplications. They probably don't get a lot of minutes on this roster. And then Jackson continues that report. The Heat would have had interest in Andrew Bogut if Willie Reed's injury had been more serious. So the in between the lines, that's good news. I guess Reed's injury is not that serious. And in further reflecting that is the idea that the Heat aren't really going to make a move anytime soon for a center or any player for this roster. And this coming on top of the Heat expected to move into that process of removing Chris Bosh from the cap and the roster.
Yeah, a lot to break down there. Something that's maybe isn't all that important as far as Miami's playoff chase is concerned. But to add to what you were saying, obviously Terrence Jones is reportedly signing with the Milwaukee Bucks for their playoff stretch. They've had a number of injury concerns, and despite his maturity issues, they assume that he can go in there and get some spot minutes. You know, they traded away Miles Plumlee. They traded away Roy Hibbert. So now they've got Spencer Hawes and Thon McCurr playing there, and that's basically it. I mean, Beasley's hurt as well. So, you know, obviously trying to fill the hole, rather sizable hole left behind by Jabari Parker's injury. So just looking for somebody to play some minutes, grab a couple of rebounds, and provide a little scoring occasionally. And I think Jones is certainly capable of that. You know, he was an interesting prospect, one that Miami might have been able to develop, and not necessarily a huge upgrade over Luke Babbitt. He just probably would not have gotten as many significant touches as he would have liked.
The big sign here, right, is that this is the group Miami's moving forward with, and that's it.
I don't see that though. I see them being more patient. I mean, you know, despite what Jackson reported, I think they're probably just waiting. You know, we talked about it. You know, when the buyout market first came up, we started talking about last season how they may have made a mistake in bringing in Briante Weber, who wound up not getting much playing time during the playoffs, and they probably could have used a big instead. Maybe they're just trying to play it safe and wait and see if somebody stays available. Maybe towards the last week of the season, maybe they'll be able to bring somebody in there or bring in somebody for the D-League too.
I mean, they're going to have a roster spot, it sounds like, right? Sure. We haven't really heard much on the Chris Bosh front, but we know what's expected to happen. And I get, yeah, you're right. I mean, patience is valuable in this situation, especially if there's nobody on, you know, that's available. That's just like, you know, mind blowing. I mean, look, they could have gotten Bogut, sure, but Bogut's probably not signing with the Heat over Cleveland. Like, this guy wants to go play the Warriors in the finals or something. Like, Bogut's probably not coming to Miami. And regardless, like, it's not like there's a Joe Johnson available or any like there was last year. Right. It's fine to stay patient. If you're not interested in Terrence Jones, there's no reason to sign him. If Omri Caspi has a broken thumb, there's no reason to sign him right now. We know Riley likes to stay flexible in all situations and keep his options open, and that's probably what he's doing here. But when I say this is the core group going forward, we're not getting a replacement for Luke Babbitt in the starting lineup. Babbitt's the starter at power forward for now. If they do sign somebody, it's going to be somebody that comes off the edge of the bench, is probably the 15th man on the roster, more likely than not, or close to it. Maybe that player plays some spot minutes down the stretch or in the playoffs and maybe contributes a little bit, but it's not going to be somebody that's going to take this Heat team to another level, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if – look, there's still our guy Jared Sullinger out there. Sully's available, and as long as he's available, we're going to hold out hope, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I like what he can do. I think he can be – somebody who can buy into this culture. He's smart enough and I think experienced enough where he could say, you know what, Miami's had a proven history.
Hey, we brought him up on the last podcast and we got a tweet that said, that basically said, there's no way Sully will ever happen. He's too fat. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, you know, I don't want to argue with our listeners too much. He definitely has some heft on him. But I've seen him up close, and it's deceptive. I think it's just – I think it's a body type. I don't know about all that. But, I mean, it's – look, his face is oddly, like, thin. It's just just the weight kind of goes to the hips and legs area. He's not fat at all, his upper body anyway. He's just got a lot of heft to him. And I think for him, it's just – it's a matter of keeping his conditioning in the right place. And that was an issue for him all season after he hurt his foot. And, you know, if you're already starting off and at a low level of conditioning, getting hurt doesn't help that. And then trying to work your way to onto a Raptors roster that's competing for a playoff spot and high seeding in the Eastern Conference, it doesn't work out. If you have an opportunity to acquire a guy like Serge Ibaka, you do it.
He's only 10 to 15 pounds heavier than James Johnson. It's not like this dude's clocking in at 300 pounds.
So. Right.
And there's other guys, and I don't know, Marcus Georges Hunt, maybe they give him another shot if they have a roster spot. We never really got to see him, but everything that we heard about him, this being the D-League guy that the Heat signed to a 10-day contract, but had to let go because Josh Richardson returned when they had that 16th roster spot, but don't anymore. Right. We never got to see him, really, and we heard nothing but good things prior to, or as the Heat signed him, so maybe they get another chance to look at him, I don't know. All right. Overall, though, I think my takeaway from Barry Jackson's report is that it's good news that they don't look at Willie Reed's injury as a long term thing, and he should be. Look, he's listed as day to day right now. That's good news.
And luckily, they didn't have an opportunity to sign Matt Barnes. That's for sure.
Yeah, we don't want anything to do with him. All right. Let's get into the meat of this thing. The schedule. We're gonna break this down. We got numbers. We got stats. We got all sorts of things that are going to be pretty interesting, and all thanks to, mostly thanks to, John Schumann's story on NBA.com, breaking down the schedule for a lot of the remaining East teams, but really has a big part in that about the Heat. John Schumann believes that the Heat have a favorable schedule coming up that should really help them make the playoffs. You and I think he's overstating a little bit and disagree, right?
Yeah, you know, he makes some cogent points there. He's looking at the next 22 games of the season and, you know, bluntly states that, you know, 13 of those are at home, where the Heat have won 9 out of their last 10 games there. So, and then moreover, 9 of the next 12 games are American Airlines Arena. But that's not necessarily just a cakewalk. It's not like you can just say, well, we're playing at home, and all of a sudden you're going to be able to walk away with a number of victories. I mean, Miami lost to Orlando Magic at home right before the All-Star break. It wasn't – did they play Philadelphia at home as well? Or no, that was at Philadelphia.
That was in Philadelphia. But, yeah, you can't just say, like, yeah, the Heat will be 9 in the next 12 or at home. They'll be 9-3 in those games. That's fine. Like, it can't be that rash. And to me, the big stat that he has is that 6 games in these final 22, 6 of them – is when the opponent is coming off of the second or is playing the second game of a back-to-back. Should I say that again? Or did I think I ruined that? 6 games in which their opponent are in the second game of a back-to-back, which is a huge factor in determining wins and losses. And that's one thing that Adam Silver has talked about trying to get rid of, because it's such a major factor in determining wins and losses in this league, is teams on the second game of a back-to-back have a very low percentage of winning. The Heat, they have 3 of those games when they're on the second game of a back-to-back. So it's not that big of a discrepancy. I mean, it's a 3-game discrepancy, which is big when you're in an Eastern Conference playoff race, which could and probably will come down to a game or two. But I think you and I are in agreement that it's not going to be that easy. You mentioned 9 of the next 10 or 9 of the next 12 are at home, which means after that, 4 of the final 10 are on the road. That's a hard stretch.
6 of the final 10.
Sorry, yeah, 6 of the final 10 are at 4 of the final 10 are at home, 6 of the final 10 are on the road. Right.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and against some pretty tough competition there. If you're looking at it now, you know, they've got games at Washington, at Toronto, at Charlotte, and while the Hornets might be struggling, you know, their defense has always been pretty solid, and you give it to you assume that Steve Clifford's going to find a way, especially if they're competing for a playoff spot. To try and knock off Miami. Look, even the Knicks, there's a home-and-home series with them as well in late March. And while you never expect to lose to the Knicks team that are struggling as mightily as they have gone through injuries and everything else, you know, playing at the Madison Square Garden, you never know if Carmelo Anthony might have a 40-point outing, and that might be just enough to knock off Miami. So it's not easy.
They've got three games against Toronto, three games against Cleveland. They've got big games against Charlotte, Detroit, teams that are going to be in that mix for the eighth seed. Boston's a tough game. Yeah, I mean, they play Boston. They play the Wizards twice, and they're playing out of their minds right now. This is a tough schedule coming up. We might as well just go through it because it's not that many. 22 games coming up, and let's just see. All right, what do we think realistically what the Heat are going to do? Now, the Heat have surprised us all season. We should say that. I don't even know, to be quite honest, if I would have said that they would have gone 2-1 against Atlanta, Indiana, and Dallas. I probably would have. Never mind. But I'm smart enough. But let's just go through it. At Orlando's Fridays, by the time, I don't know, many people are hearing this, this might be over, but we think that's a win. We might sound like idiots if they lose, but we think that's a win, right?
Yeah.
So then they play Cleveland twice on Saturday, and then they get a couple day off, and they play them on Monday. You think they split this series?
Yeah, I do. I think they can finish up the game against Orlando on a high, come back down back at home. With relatively short travel from the Central Florida area there, and I think they'll be able to be a little refreshed against the Cavaliers. They'll have something to prove. And
Kevin Love's not playing. The Cleveland is still trying to work some guys in the rotation. Miami is on the second game of a back-to-back.
Now, I will say a lot of that has to do with whether or not Waiters is back. He's got a sprained ankle, and he didn't practice with the Heat today. And they were cautiously optimistic that he might not be able to play against Orlando. So if he's back on Saturday and he's feeling good, maybe he's rested and has one of his stronger games, then, you know, obviously I'd give the edge to Miami.
I'm not going to say that they win that game, but I wouldn't say winning one of those two is out of the question. So let's just say they split the series, right? So 2-1.
Sure. Right.
Okay. So let's keep going. Versus Charlotte.
I think that's a win for Miami too.
Versus Toronto.
It's
probably a loss. That's a tough game.
It is.
They're on a lot of rest. Charlotte's
3 days off.
Yeah, the Heat all have 3 days rest going to Toronto. Maybe they split that one. Let's say they split Charlotte and Toronto.
That's at home, too. So, I mean, that's an interesting one. But then they travel the next day to back-to-back a game against Indiana on the second night of a back-to-back set. So, I mean, that's a difficult one there. Although Indiana hasn't looked great against Miami. You know, obviously, Paul George has always struggled at the American Airlines Arena during the regular season. Not so much when he's at the Bankers Fieldhouse. So I would give the edge to the Pacers.
Mm. So New Orleans, they get a couple. They get a couple days off here versus New Orleans, but New Orleans' size is tough. That's tough. Yeah. I don't know if they're on the second game of a back to back on that one, but
the Pelicans.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure.
I think that's probably a loss if they're not. I'm going to try to bring it up really fast and be a ninja about this. Let's see. They play Miami. Yeah, they're on the second game of a back-to-back. They play Portland in New Orleans on Tuesday.
And then travel to Miami.
That might be a win. That might be a win if they're traveling like that. Versus Minnesota. Karl-Anthony Towns is playing out of his mind. And then versus Portland.
You think the DeMarcus Cousins, Luke Babbitt matchup skews in Miami's favor?
No, but I do think that I don't know, man. Like that second game of the back to back, I think that might be the situation where they're able to take advantage of it, because
Whiteside versus Anthony Davis.
They're going to be on so much rest, though. I mean, they play Indiana on Sunday and then play New Orleans on Wednesday, and then New Orleans has to play a fast paced Portland Trailblazers team on Tuesday, and then come back to Miami and play on Wednesday night.
Well, yeah, they won't be out in South Beach the night before, that's for sure.
Ah, that might actually end up working in their favor.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the day after than the second game of the back-to-back.
Yeah, even if they're playing a second game of a back-to-back set, I mean, even if they're in Miami for a day or two beforehand, there's always the South Beach factor to take into consideration, although I think that happens in every NBA city.
So versus Minnesota, versus Portland, and versus Phoenix, that's the end of a five-game homestand for Miami. Portland, Phoenix, Toronto. Well, Minnesota, Portland, Phoenix, Toronto. I think they could go 3-1 in those games, probably losing to Toronto or Minnesota.
Yeah, I could see that.
At Boston, that's a loss, right?
It's a loss, yeah.
At Detroit, I kind of like how they match up. Maybe Miami's coming out. A lot of urgency to get this play, the tiebreaker for the playoffs. They win that game? They got to win one of these road games.
Yeah, I guess so. So they go 1-2 during the three games stretch here.
And then they play the Knicks in New York and a home-and-home because then they play them on 2 days later in Miami. So the Knicks back-to-back.
They dropped a game at the Garden.
They did drop a game at the Garden. You're right. I don't know. Maybe they split that one for the sake of argument and moving this along.
Yeah.
All right, then versus Denver, we think that's a loss. Denver matches up too well with the Heat.
That's a tough one.
Jokic versus Whiteside's not easy.
And at Charlotte.
At Charlotte. So they're going to play Charlotte twice. We already have them winning once. Maybe they lose this one. I don't know.
One was at home.
Yeah.
The first game was at home on March 8th. This one on April 5th is at Charlotte.
Yeah. I think they can win that one, but they're going to be on a lot of rest. They play Denver on Sunday, and then they have a couple days rest. They play Charlotte on Wednesday. That's a toss-up there.
We should always add the caveat that a lot could happen, not just for Miami, but for all the other teams they're playing, too. An injury here, a guy sitting out one night, and that changes the complexion of the game pretty considerably.
These last four games are murderous row, though.
Yeah.
At Toronto, at Washington, versus Cleveland, versus Washington. Cleveland might end up being the easiest game out of all of them because they're probably going to be resting LeBron at this point. So.
Yeah, I don't see Washington. Well, I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't think Scott Brooks is the kind of coach that would sit out guys towards the end of the season.
Yeah, no way. Not in his first year either.
Yeah.
No. I think they could easily lose to Washington both times. The Wizards are good this year, man.
They are.
This is tough. So you and I, we're going through this. We're thinking they're 10-12 in these last 22 games, which would put the Heat 38-45 for the season. Which is right where we thought before the year that they'd probably be, but 38-45, is that good 38 enough?
38-44.
Sorry, you're right. I'm bad at math. 38-44. Is that good enough to make the playoffs in the East?
Well, a lot would depend on Detroit at this point. I think, you know, we reason that Chicago is a team that you could theoretically catch up to. We thought that they would probably struggle more than they would after the All-Star break and the trade and everything else. I mean, they lost, you know, McDermott. They lost Taj Gibson.
They beat the Warriors Thursday, so who knows?
They didn't get much in return. So, yes, they'll somehow they found a way to knock off the best team in the league probably. So, you know, it's tough to predict with them, but I think you'd rather have your eyes set on Detroit and hope that maybe the combination of Andre Drummond's free throw shooting and Reggie Jackson's histrionics might throw the team into a tailspin. But that doesn't seem to be the case just yet. So it's tough to predict. But I mean, obviously, it's certainly within Miami's grasp. They have to play their best and they have to hope for some minor miracles along the way.
And look, we're talking about how hot the Heat are. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Detroit's 6-4. They're not all that worse.
Too far.
Yeah. This is going to be tough. Look, I think Chicago and Indiana, they're three games ahead of Miami with 22 games left. I just don't see them catching Chicago and Indiana. I just don't see it. It's too many games. It's too much to make up. Detroit's the one. And really, you know, they're a game back. It's still anybody's eighth seed at this point between Detroit and Miami. I think Milwaukee and Charlotte are basically out of it. I don't see how they can catch up there. Milwaukee's two games back. Well, they could probably still get in there. Charlotte's three games back. They've really dug themselves into a hole. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's still those four guys are in it. Those four teams are in it. So, I don't know. It's going to be a tough schedule. But, hey, that's why we watch the games. And that's why we're here covering them after every game for you. It's to give you great insight just like this. All right, anything else we got to add before we send people off for the weekend?
No.
Good. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, or you can send us some mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Hey, We've got a couple, like two or three really good mailbag questions. We need a few more for Monday's mailbag. We need some good ones. Send them in, lockedonheat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.